Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Hopeful Environmentalist, a podcast discussing hope and solutions in the climate space and providing resources for how you can take action to help create a better future for humans and the planet. It's your host, Taylor Gannis, and today we have a very special guest on the podcast to talk about how climate change is impacting food. And I don't know about you all, but I love my food. I love to eat. We need to eat. So this is relevant to everybody. We talk about how climate change is impacting things like coffee and wine. And again, I don't know about you, but I love my coffee and wine. And I know a lot of people who also love their coffee and wine. And we don't just talk about coffee and wine, don't worry. We talk about other foods and how it's being impacted by climate change directly and indirectly, how it's impacting farmers and just everyday people who need to eat. So this is a really interesting topic and relevant to everybody. So very important that we all stay tuned and listen to this episode. It was one of my favorites to record because I really don't know much about this topic. I knew climate change impacts food, but hearing some of the statistics and hearing some of just how it happens and how it really impacts food on a systems level, and it was really interesting, and I'm excited for you all to listen to it. So without further ado, I will introduce our guest speaker. Michael Hoffman is dedicating his life to confronting the grand challenge of climate change by helping people understand and appreciate what's happening through the foods we all love and need. We all eat, making this story relevant to everyone every day. He's published climate change articles in popular presses like The Hill, Fortune, Median, Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, Daily News, and USA Today, and is a lead author of Our Changing Menu, Climate Change and the Foods We Love and Need by Cornell Press. His TEDx talk, Climate Change, It's Time to Raise Our Voices, has been well received along with more than 150 climate change related talks he has given. Mike's life's experiences include growing up on a one cow dairy farm, serving in the Marines during the Vietnam War, and being a father and someone's partner for 52 years. He held multiple leadership roles in the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, including executive director of the Cornell Institute for Climate Change Solutions, director of the Cornell University Agriculture Experiment Station, associate dean of the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, associate director of Cornell Cooperative Extension, and director of the New York State Integrated Pest Management Program. He received his BS degree from the University of Wisconsin, his MS from the University of Arizona, and PhD from the University of California, Davis. He now holds the title of Professor Emeritus. I don't know if I pronounced that right, but that is the word. And he will tell the climate change story until he no longer can. So I am so excited and honored to introduce Mike Hoffman to the podcast. Hi, so welcome onto the podcast. It's so great to have you on today.
And Taylor, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, I have a lot of questions that I personally am very unaware of the answers to. So this is for the audience, but it's also for me today. So can you tell us a little bit about your career and how this all led you to writing the book, Our Changing Menu?
Well, I've been fortunate to hold many different leadership roles at Cornell University in the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. And I think anybody, whether you're CEO of a company or in an academic institution in a leadership role, you better be looking at the big issues, and climate change is one of the biggest, if not the biggest. And I've given many, many presentations to audiences about sustainability and climate change. And it seemed like when I brought up coffee or food, the audience kind of leaned forward a little bit. And that sort of planted the seed that, you know, this food thing and climate might really be a good story to tell. And then, you know, you think about it further, when you're communicating about climate change, it has to be relevant. It's pretty hard to beat food. We need it to live. It's kind of basic. We love it. It's part of our family cultures. I mean, family histories. It's part of our cultures. It's like easy to talk about, and it's fun. And so you take all that together, and it's pretty hard to not use food to help tell the climate change story. It's almost the ultimate climate change messenger, because We encounter it several times a day. But the story that I tell is for the rich world, because we essentially cause most of the problem in a cumulative sense, and we have the capacity to help. So I'm not doing anything else but telling the climate change and food story as long as I can.
Yeah, I love that. And as a fellow food eater and food lover, I am also very concerned when I hear and see those articles. I've been seeing them pop up more and more. So it's great that more attention is being brought to this and that more people are starting to see, well, also as a storyteller, trying to get people to see this is how it impacts you. It's not just a faraway thing.
As I say, melting glaciers are bad enough, but the loss of coffee is downright terrifying.
As a coffee lover too, it also terrifies me. Many of us are, like you just said about glaciers, are aware of the fact that climate change is causing glaciers to collapse, sea level to rise, temperatures to soar, and extreme temperatures and weather to wreak havoc on our communities around the world. But not many people are aware, like we just mentioned, about how climate change is coming for the food we eat. So can you tell us a little bit about how climate change is actually going to be impacting agriculture and our food and how we get our food?
Well, all you have to do is watch the news and hear about floods, heat waves, droughts. I mean, we've all killed houseplants because we forget to water them or we put them near a heat source that, you know, they bake. But imagine acres and acres of crops being subjected to those same kind of stresses. It's tough on farmers. And, you know, in part, it's getting very hot even to work in the fields. So there's all kinds of issues related to how agriculture is being impacted. But then if you look at food, basically everything a plant needs, like a plant in the field, a crop plant, like air, specifically carbon dioxide, water, the right temperature, and good soil, and you also need sunlight to grow, for that plant to grow. Everything is changing except sunlight. And this is where it gets really interesting. I mean, if you just look at carbon dioxide, you'll hear that, oh, wait a minute, because carbon dioxide is kind of like a fertilizer to plants. And the more you provide, the faster they grow, the higher they yield. And you'll hear for some that, wow, climate change is good because yields are going to go up. We're going to have more food. No, the consensus is more extreme weather is going to offset anything gained by increases in carbon dioxide. But carbon dioxide does a lot of other interesting things. And I use the word interesting kind of loosely because most of it's kind of scary. But the nutritional quality of most of our main staple crops, like rice and wheat, the nutritional quality is going to decline as carbon dioxide continues to increase in the atmosphere. It's already up 50%, more than it should be. You think of all literally billions of people that may already be on marginal diets, and now essential minerals, vitamins decline, and protein decline. That's quite serious. There's been some research that increasing carbon dioxide will make weeds harder to control with certain herbicides. The protein content in pollen that bees need has been shown to decline as CO2 increases. So there's a lot of really intriguing things that happen with increases in CO2, most of which are fairly negative. There are some positives in veggies, vegetables, some of those essential minerals and et cetera, antioxidants actually increase. So now there's a plus side in some cases to climate change. Something else that's happened to the air is smoke. And few people stop to think that cattle are out of doors. They're inhaling that smoke and it harms their health and they don't have any place to escape. Even I was surprised when I paused and thought, well, of course. Water, where it falls, when it falls, how it falls, and what form it falls is changing. A couple examples. The U.S. imports something like $5 to $6 billion worth of agricultural products from Chile and Peru every year. And frankly, that's where I get the blueberries I love during our wintertime. Well, they depend on meltwaters from the ice cap in Andes, but that'll be gone in about 15 years. There's also something now we're calling whiplash. So California was in a drought for 20 years, and now they're back up to almost like normal amount of rain. Italy a few years ago was in drought for 2 years and then got flooded. 5,000 farms were affected severely. So that kind of a whiplash from either too much water or not enough. And temperature, sure, it's getting warmer, but winters are warming faster than summers, which means fruit and nut crops are compromised because they require a certain amount of cold temperatures. If they don't get that, they don't bear fruit or nuts. Georgia's peaches were down in 2017 and last year by over 90% because the previous winter was too warm. That's kind of a surprise. And also nights are warming faster than days, which affects yields. So there's all of these. There's just a long list of amazing slash frightening things that are happening to our food because of climate change. And one last one, the wheat crop in the Midwest and the U.S. used to get hit by a heat wave that was pretty devastating every 100 years. Now it's predicted to be every 6 years.
Yes, someone who lived in North Dakota for a year, just seeing how people talked about, and they're big farming community and big agricultural communities, and just I could see it with my own eyes how things were changing and how they were describing how things were changing. Like the winter we just had was, we barely had any snow, and everyone was telling me about how usually the snow goes up to their roofs, and that helps also to helps with the soil, and they didn't have that, and the crops were so dry. More water was needed. They needed to bring in more water. So just seeing it with my own eyes and what you're talking about, and just I saw a small part of it, and there's a global problem that's going on here, but seeing it in our own communities is also so frightening. So yeah, thank you for going into each one of those foods, because everyone, I'm sure someone heard a food that you just described and like, oh, but I love that. Oh, that's how it's impacted. Oh, that's frightening. So now I would love to know about wine, because I'm a wine connoisseur. I say I'm a wine connoisseur. I love wine. But for our other wine connoisseurs out there, how is climate change coming for your wine?
I like wine too. But the thing I just mentioned about winter chill, grapes also need that winter chill. So as winter's warm, potentially yields of grapes will decline. High temperatures on grapes cause increases in or reduction in acidity, more sugars. They can change the aroma of a wine. And so a lot of the things I already mentioned, heat waves, droughts, et cetera, are changing grape production, wine grape production. Harvest are coming earlier. I heard a story the other day, I believe it was from California, where they plant, I think it was a rose bush at the end of each row, and they use that as a guide as when the grapes will be ready to harvest. So it sort of gives them a heads up on when harvest is coming. In Europe, vineyards are moving north. The UK is claiming that will be the wine center of Europe in the future. Well, that may be the case. Smoke from the fires out west gave wine a sort of smoky tint or hint for a while. So a lot of things going on with grapes. But in every case that I mentioned, there are a lot of people working to keep that wine flowing. Whether they're in the wine industry or farmers, you know, they're doing their best to, frankly, in part stay in business, but also keep that good Chardonnay for me on my table.
And that is important. I am a Pinot Noir girl, but it's all important.
Choice. But if I look at the future of wine, we may just simply have to get used to new wines. There'll be new varieties that are resilient, more resilient to climate change. They'll be different. They'll still be there. I mean, just see some changes like that.
Yeah, and we're starting to see that with not even just food. Like I know I saw an article recently about like coral, and we're able to make like certain coral species and plant them. I don't know all the technological terms, but you know, it's like they plant them and they're different. They're not the exact same ones, but they're more resilient to certain things.
Exactly.
And additionally, I know a lot of people who proclaim to me that they couldn't survive the workday without their precious cup of coffee. So is climate change also coming for people's coffee?
Absolutely. Coffee is sensitive to conditions, temperature, water availability, and that's all changing. So the prediction now is that the area that's acceptable for coffee today will decline by half by mid-century. You can also add a new disease or one that's spreading and an insect pest that just loves the new climate change conditions, which is causing serious problems. Though definitely, here again, there are people looking for alternatives to coffee, using a variety of nuts and so on. That's ways to go, because for a connoisseur, it's probably not even close to acceptable yet. But again, there are a number of new companies trying to find alternatives to coffee. So again, there's some positive news, even for coffee drinkers like myself.
Yeah, I've seen people drinking like dandelion root coffee, and I really would love to know how if that has any add up to coffee today as we know it. But yeah, I've seen some of those alternatives. Also, many people, specifically in global north countries, such as the U.S., are really unaware of where their food is coming from. We're really disconnected from our food systems. I know I am. So one example on your website is of an interactive map that shows how the ingredients that make up just one Kellogg bar come from many different countries all over the world. So can you tell us how current food systems are contributing to climate change?
Sure. Now, I want to make something clear right up front. There's sometimes confusion between the term using food system and farming or agriculture. The food system contributes between 25 and 30-some percent of greenhouse gas emissions, so it's a big contributor. But if you just look at agriculture, like on-farm, and this is a U.S. data point, it's about 10%. But, okay, so that's when you look at the full greenhouse gas emission sort of portfolio, the biggest part of the food system is from agricultural production. Anytime you open the soil, and if it's tilled too often, you're losing carbon to the atmosphere. So it's contributing to climate change. The use of synthetic fertilizers, both the production and use, is part of the agricultural production contribution. And then you think about methane released from rice that's grown in paddies that are flooded. And of course, methane from animals, ruminants, dairy cattle, beef cattle. And finally, just on-farm use of fuel. So those things contribute to climate change. The next on the list is land use. So one of the big ones there is deforestation. Again, you're cutting down trees that are capturing carbon, but you're also opening up the soil to release the carbon in the soil. The other thing about is fires that are burning in our forest are another major emitter of carbon dioxide in particular. Then as we get down sort of more in the food system, it's the supply chain, transport, storage, refrigeration, processing all contributes. And finally, let's look at ourselves a little bit. It's on the consumer end. We also contribute to this, especially through waste. So kind of that was a summary of where the greenhouse gases are coming from the food system, and it is substantial. I think the big one there is distinguishing between on-farm emissions and the whole food system. But again, it is a big contributor to climate change. But I think we'll get into it in the future. There are things happening that are fighting that battle too.
Yeah. Something I've been seeing too lately when you talk about like the deforestation is in the Amazon and how agriculture is one of the leading causes for deforestation and these fires that we're seeing at unprecedented levels. So that's been flooding my feed recently. So how is this all impacting farmers globally?
Well, farming is already tough. Set climate change aside, farmers always talk about the weather because, maybe it's just a natural drought or they're flooded or they get a frost at the wrong time or a heat wave, but now just make that much worse because of climate change. So they're just facing day-to-day challenges that are, made much worse by climate change. And a couple examples, a student that was in my class was visiting her family in Greece recently. Her family depends on production of olives, there were no olives. They haven't had rain since March, and that's their family, her family's income. I was in Vietnam several years ago, and the year before there'd been a long drought. And again, no rice, no income for farmers. And I already mentioned the example of floods in Italy, you know, 5,000 farms. So it's difficult. And I think maybe part of the story here is we need to respect those who grow our food. I mean, wherever it comes from, and we're talking, you know, spices from India, where the monsoon has changed and the rainfall's at a different time and higher temperatures, it's actually getting very hot there again. Another example is just so hot for farmers to actually farm.
Yeah, definitely want to get out that this is a big respect to farmers and anyone who works on farms or works on producing our food and getting our food to where it is. We would not be able to have the luxuries that we have without them.
No, and I mean, as a background, I grew up on a farm, so I kind of know, and I've worked in agriculture for many years, and I do respect those who grow our food.
100%. So what are ways in which farmers and our global food systems can adapt to these changes and challenges?
Well, there's something, and it's happening global, it's called climate smart farming. And a lot of it is, I've had a farmer, I gave a lecture one time on climate smart farming, and he just came up to me afterwards, said, "Mike, it's common sense farming." Kind of put me in a place after a real fancy lecture. Soil. Protecting the soil, using cover crops, tilling no more than you have to. That's like at the top of the list, because in part, soil has lost carbon. So if you treat it right, there's a deficit and you can put that carbon back. And there are programs and groups working on that. Too much water, not enough water. So, you know, for a farmer, and if they can afford it, when do they need to purchase irrigation equipment? Maybe they haven't needed it in the past. And another one is where it's feasible, diversify. If you can grow multiple crops, and if you lose some to climate change, you still have others and you have an income. So there's a lot of things that farmers are doing. They're adapting these changes. They're using, there's in many cases, you know, you think of where wind energy comes from, that's on farms. So they're contributing in positive ways as well, but also dealing with a huge amount of change in and how they operate.
Yeah, it definitely seems like there's many ways that farmers are adapting and being resilient, which is...
Right, exactly. That's the word, resilience. Yep.
So people today who are listening to this podcast and might be like, well, I love wine or I love to eat food just like everybody else. Like, what can I do? So for people that are listening, what can they do?
The biggest impediment to action on climate change is the lack of political will. So if you care about your food, please get involved. In the U.S., you know, climate change, as far as the public's thought on what the priority should be for the president and Congress, climate change is number 19. So maybe raising awareness about the importance of food, the number of jobs involved in that would be important. And our research related to climate change and food, we wanted to know if people really care about climate change impact on their food. And I thought it was quite surprising when we asked a question in this national survey, how concerned are you about climate change effects on food choices? Well, the responses jumped across the political divide. More or less everybody, two-thirds of everybody, our concern. Another question had, do you want to know more about how climate change is affecting your food? And the same results. So, you know, is food sort of a unique player in all of this that could actually help everybody? If you're concerned about your beer, your wine, your mashed potatoes are top of my list, but, you know, it gets everybody's attention because simply put, we all eat, you know, can't get around it. And we love food. So the other things is to talk about climate change. We don't talk about it enough, yet it is one of the biggest first steps in this whole challenge we face is to start talking about it. Help yourself, you know, learn more about what's going on. It's not, you don't have to be a scientist to understand climate change. It's not that difficult overall. What are you good at? Put it to use. Are you an artist? A poet? A news person? You know, we can all, I call it, find your greater purpose and put it to use in fighting this grand challenge we face. And the other thing is peer pressure really helps. So if you start talking about climate change and what you might be doing, well, the others around you are going to go, maybe that's what I should be doing too. Or, you know, an example of be the first on your street to put on solar on the roof. And all of a sudden, you'll notice others are kind of walking by and looking at that and thinking, maybe I should do that too. Peer pressure is really powerful stuff to get people to act. And finally, the most powerful way to get action on climate change is through what our children and grandchildren will face. It's the love of the next generation. That's a huge motivator. So I'll just plant that seed too, bear that in mind as people hearing this think about climate change. It's our future. And right now it's pretty scary, unless we act.
I love that. Yeah, it's, and I know some indigenous cultures, they think like seven generations ahead. And I think that's such an important thing that we can learn from indigenous people is really caring about who's coming after us and who we're leaving this land to. Yeah. And like something else that you mentioned about just talking about it, just telling people about it. It's, people minimize that, but it's so important. The more people you tell, a ripple effect happens.
Well, there's another interesting bit of information about. So roughly 70% of the people, and I'm referring in the U.S., are concerned about climate change. But when you ask them, well, what percentage of the rest of the population do you think is concerned? And I'll say 40%. So by talking about it, you're going to help that. Well, it turns out there's that misunderstanding. But again, here's where talking can help about it, get everybody on board. Talk to your neighbor and they're going to say, yeah, I'm concerned about it. Well, oh, then that supports your thoughts.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely felt that, like, I was probably one of those people that think, oh, nobody else cares. But then you realize so many people do, especially when they're presented with what's going to happen to their food or what's going to happen for their future generations. You start to see that a click, like, okay, this is important thing. So now on like a more hopeful ending, what makes you hopeful for the future?
I have a difficult time with this question because I know too much.
I, as the hopeful environmentalist, I also struggle with it. So don't worry.
But what I find is, I may have mentioned at the beginning, but I just feel extraordinarily privileged to be doing what I'm doing. And I teach a class called Using the Power of Food to Confront Climate Change. It's an awakening for the students, like, oh, I didn't know this was, all of these things are happening to my food. And we go through storytelling exercises, how to tell the story of climate change and food. We play roles, denier versus believer, and it's, deniers will say, I could say anything. I could make up stuff, you know? And the believers are struggling to get the message through. But it seems like food, again, is a really good messenger. And by the end, at the beginning of the course, and all the lectures I give, guest lectures, I'll ask the student audience, in one word, describe your future given climate change. And almost in every lecture hall from the back will be hopeless, overwhelmed, concerned, uncertain. But in the course, and once the students understand the power of food, that word changes dramatically from hopeless to hopeful. From, I think there's one like somebody felt hot and now after they took the course, they feel cool. I mean, all different ways of describing it. So I'm just convinced that food has this incredible power. And so that gives me hope that there's something out there that we can use. And I also look across, you think of, what if the story were told by chefs, and that some of that has already happened, retailers, restaurateurs, the food media, and producer groups, farmer groups, consumer groups? And I don't see any enemies in that list. We're all together. We all eat. We all have to join forces. But to all tell the story, I just think we could bring about a change, you know, that we need quickly and at scale. And again, we all eat, and we can all do something.
See, that was a great answer. There is hope. It's something that, you know, people ask me all the time. And I'm like, well, some days I struggle with it. Some days I'm like, okay, I don't really know if I'm feeling my hope that I want to normally give off. But, you know, everything you said is so important.
Well, I mean, if you just say it's hopeless, then the end result is sort of inevitable. And I can't accept that.
Very true. So is there anything else that you would like to add before we wrap up?
Give it a try. When you have food the next time, look at your plate. And there's a real simple thing you can do if you have your smartphone handy. You do a search, climate change and wine. Climate change and beer, or an ingredient. Climate change and hot peppers. And most of the time, you'll get a story. I did this with an audience a while back, and I mentioned figs. And someone said, oh, this is cool. Figs are actually quite resilient to climate change. But someone else found another story that the pollinator of figs is now getting out of sync with the fig tree when it's in bloom. So fig production's at risk because of this, you know, asynchrony now between this pollinator shows up at the wrong time. The flowers have already occurred. That's some of these incredible interactions are being affected. So that's one thing to do. But yeah, and then doggone it, talk to your neighbor. Over a glass of wine.
Yeah.
And see what else.
And then talk about why your wine might be, be disappearing or impacted.
Exactly.
And then, yeah, I saw something great on your website, Our Changing Menu, and I would love people to go check it out. Is that ingredients thing that you have on there and seeing what's where your ingredients are from and how they're being impacted. So definitely would love to plug that in. If there's any other resources that you share with me, I will link them in the description of the podcast so people can easily go click and find it and share it with anyone that they might know who also loves food.
Well, I do have to mention the book, of course, too.
Oh, yes. 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 We will link that in there. And of course, people can go. I'm so excited to dive into it. Very, very excited to read it. So yeah, is that all you have? Anything else? Any last bits of wisdom?
No, I just say keep up the fight, everybody.
I love that. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast today and sharing your amazing knowledge.
No, my pleasure. I really sincerely appreciate the opportunity. Thank you, Taylor.